here to help us, and we're going to start with the presentation, and Carrie, I think you're going to lead it, right? All right, please. Yep, let's go. And maybe you want to introduce your colleagues.
Okay. Should I sit here or back there?
Sit here and run the machine. And
I'm going to run the machine. Oh. I have my...
You got your tool.
In essence of time, I'd like to give you just a quick overview, a little history here. My name is Carrie Boyd. I represent the Yukon-Koyukuk School District. And about a year ago, Yukon-Koyukuk School District formed a nonprofit, Alyeska Worldwide, which is the host of our project, the Whole Village Project. And almost a year ago, Chris Simon and I were discussing how can we really bring about some change that's necessary in Alaska. And the first person that both of us thought about to help us with our endeavor is Carl Knutson. Carl Knutson worked before as a superintendent in Galena City School District and used many innovative educational methodologies that are still successful today. And based off of that, we hired Carl on as a consultant to help me and Chris, at the time it was just the three of us, bring about our project. In October, we presented to President Hamilton, and he was very excited about what we had to offer. He made some suggestions to us as to how we can improve what we were doing and suggested that we present to Bill Allen. Well, we did. We presented to Bill Allen. He also was excited. However, he is USDA, and he cannot help us with the funding that we need to get off the ground and suggest.
USDA means?
U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So you got to remember, for those of us around here, there's more than one Bill Allen in the world.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good point. Remember that. And at his suggestion, we put in a budget request to Senator Wilkins. We had originally put in a request for $4 million and matching federal funds for the same. However, in the last month, we reduced it to $2 million and are still working with some grants and other things currently. So today, we're hoping at least to get some support in that area. After we met with Bill Allen of the USDA, he arranged for us to present here in Juneau. We've been back and forth a few times. The latest time was with the Bilateral Aboriginal Committee, and you were there and asked us to present here, and that's why we are here again today. That just gives you a quick overview. And so with that, we will get started. The Whole Village Project, our goal is to incorporate these essential elements: safety, health, education, economic development, social services, culture, government, and entertainment. Today's focus will be, we're going to do our best to show you how we're going to bring all of this together, focusing on education for at-risk youth using proven ILP processes. ILP stands for Individual Learning Plan. These are some of the methodologies that were used in Galena and have been proven to work. Rural economic development, which Frank Odez and Eric Downey will be sharing with you next. Preservation of native culture, providing options for village life. That will be Frank Odez again. And content delivery networking, how we're going to get all of this out here using a cost-effective measure to deliver the technology. And TAMSCO will be talking about that, Fletcher Brown. And again, there's me. Carl Knutson, he's one of our, again, he's the consultant. He's one of the expertise members here that will be helping out. Frank Odez, right here. Fletcher Brown, technology. And we've also, as I mentioned previously, the more we present, the better the ideas that we have to formulate our project. And with the Alaska Manufacturing Extension Partnership, Eric Downey will be talking very briefly with you as well, and Dr. Dan Edelaine with his TV broadcasting. And with that, I'd like to start with Carl Knutson.
Chairman Dyson, and member of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to be brief because I know that there'll be desire for questions later, and as of our presentation yesterday in the House Education Committee, we were asked for more brevity and less detail, so we're trying to accommodate that. Most of you know that I was a superintendent for 8 years out in Galena, and during that period of time, we did a lot of innovative educational things to try to meet the needs of the students. One of the things that we discovered in order to the plan that we put together and implemented out there in the last 5 years of my tenure had the anything you do with improving education has to be collaborative, has to be involving the village, the city, the school, the tribe, and so that we were able to accomplish. Has to be successful, obviously, and has to be replicable. And so in our effort now, after 3 years of my absence from there, the program is still running well, which means that it's sustainable. It's not just something I created and when I left it would quit. So those are important ideas to keep in mind. The paradigm shift is quite simple. We can't continue to pour money into the same rat hole, and you folks know how painful it is to approve budgets that's continually increasing, and yet our productivity and our evidence of improvement is not following that same chart. So we discovered we had to train teachers to teach differently, and we have a model that we developed using the best practices and asset building, and that created an environment where students were successful. And if you understand about assets, students possess about 20 internal assets and 20 external assets. And the more of those that they possess, the more successful they are. And so you must have that in mind when you train teachers, and the outcome then will be success. When I first went to Galena, our reports, our standardized test scores were absolutely terrible, and I was actually shocked coming from Lower 48 and going to a village school. And our test scores in reading were somewhere in the 80 percentile. Writing scores is somewhere in the around the 60, 70 percentile, and math is at 75, all either below or not proficient. And we knew we had to do something with that, and it just happens, this is a report from the public in 2003, the year I left, retired, that from another village school, and obviously that's why Chris Simon asked if we could come back and help try to improve their test scores and meet annual unity progress. The next slide you see is the Galena benchmark scores in 2003, it's on the website. When I left the district, we had 90.9% either proficient or advanced. In writing, is 81%. In math, it was also 81%. And so it can be done. And those are 85% Athabasca Native students out there. And we can be successful by using the model that we've created and we've proven. The next slide will show the comparison from the 87% below in 1995 to 90% and writing 81%, math 81%. The good thing about this is that we did it in a building-based school. We did it in the Glean Elementary and High School, and we also did it in the Regional Learning Center. And so 4 years ago, our students average coming in, this happens to be last year's freshman class, scoring on the assessment test from the 50th to the 25th percentile, all pretty much Alaska Native, and a lot of them from failing schools coming into the residential program that we have out there. Last year, the kids that we had for 4 years scored all above the 90th percentile on the high school qualifying exam. So it does work in that setting as well.
Excuse me, Carl.
Yes.
Regional Learning Center means the boarding school?
Yes. We changed the terminology because since I've been back, they said that they don't call it that anymore. And so it's the, we call it the residential program, but it's the boarding school. Focus on the problem, schools are failing. There's a lot of schools, a couple hundred of them in Alaska, that are not meeting annual yearly progress on a regular basis. Federal takeover, which is in the law that would be a result of that, certainly is not the answer. And there are some solutions available. One of them, of course, is what we have developed. And what it calls for is creating an individual learning plan, not just for special ed or gifted kids, but for every student. And many people that would look at this say, well, it's too paper intensive, it's too much work, but really it isn't, because we've made it completely web-based, and it's automated, and it's actually a godsend and an easy thing for teachers and parents and students to use. The teachers, parents, and students must be involved in developing the individual learning plan. It must be connected to the state standards, and our software automatically embeds the state standards in that student's learning plan when they click on it, and it's done that fast. The automation of the software that we have is not only does it report and track the students, but it also has a distribution management content in it, so it's a total package that really works. We've done it in the bricks and mortar school, we've done it in the homeschools and the regional learning center. In the homeschools, we were asked 2 years ago by an individual in Idaho to replicate the IDEA program here in Alaska down there as a statewide virtual charter school. We went down, we did that, we signed up 640 students last year. This year, they have 1,000 students, and the preliminary test scores show that using this training model for the teachers and parents, that they have a 10% increase in the standardized tests in 1 year. So it works in all three of those programs. The reviewing this, the improvement model that we're professing that works is demonstrated in Galena. We've demonstrated in Idaho. It's collaborative. It has to be successful. It has to be able to be replicated, and it has to be sustainable. And I have to say that, you know, my replacement, Jim Smith, the superintendent in Galena, and the board and administration there have successfully carried that on. I looked on the website, and the 2005 test scores are very similar to what we saw there when I left in 2003. So it is being sustained. It can be replicated. And so that pretty much sums up my portion. Then the economic, and one of the things that we talked about, Bill Allen from USDA, he was very excited about his efforts has been trying to provide economic development, e-commerce, and entrepreneurship in the villages. And so we've asked these folks to come in and show what they're doing out there and how this could be intertwined and implemented within the curriculum. So Franco does.
Frank Odez, Lone Eagle Consulting, Dillon, Montana. Honored leaders, pleased to be here. Thank you for your time. Years ago, I was challenged with what's the best people could do to support one another online. That was 1983. I created the Big Sky Telegraph Project in 88 to connect one-room schools, the heart of rural communities. And over 100 one-room schools were connected, and this was one of the first rural networking projects in the country. I learned a lot about human nature, a lot about self-directed learning, and a lot about education. As a result of this project, people dialed in long distance over modems to see what the online medium was all about. We preceded the U.S. Department of Education posting lesson plans on the internet and on bulletin board systems by a full 7 years. As a result, I traveled 50,000 miles a year for the better part of a decade, traveling all around the country. Today, happily, I get to stay home and work via a wireless modem through the internet, teaching online for three universities, one of which is Alaska Pacific University. In 97, I did the first internet workshops for the villages of the YKASD district, and it was profoundly interesting in that most people had no idea what the internet could offer, and yet I had a 10-year history already of working online. When I visited the villages, I started with the preschool kids and worked my way up to the elders. We did digital art, digital music, digital photography, cultural storytelling. Lewis wanted a web page to market his e-commerce or his ecotourism business, Mushing, and we created the web page in an afternoon. Working with the fourth graders, who were the first digital generation in Koyukuk, carrying on the traditions and values of their ancestors, these fourth graders had posted Athabascan language pages on the web and created a community website in a single day. On an international basis, there are incredible movements afoot to empower people with high-speed internet. Here's an elder in Koyukuk with her family scrapbook in multimedia format. And this was just last week in Anvik. These gals are at Bratz.com viewing videos and rich multimedia courtesy of a village-owned satellite system. This is the mayor of Hooper Bay, whom we visited, and he told us with great passion on his vision for creating a learning community. Just 2 weeks ago, we had an eBay workshop courtesy of AMEP in the village. And people are very excited, and we're looking at Hooper Bay as a possible pilot community to get out ahead and show people what is possible with some passion, vision, and appropriate tools and education. This is a $100 laptop that is now has been created by MIT, and they're looking at creating these by the millions for use in third world countries internationally. When I was last in Koyukuk with Eliza Jones, we created a flip book, and she had a history with 150 photographs. She brought in her scrapbook, and in just 4 hours, she narrated the history behind each one of 150 photographs. And this is just a quick sample as the type of tool that can be used effectively in villages to inspire people that they can indeed be a part of the digital age at any age.
This is Eliza Jones, an elder of Koyukuk, author of the following digital story.
We identified photographs that were Julie Eve's photo album from the 60s.
She's having an elders conference in Koyukuk in June. We hope to be able to go back and help Eliza and the elders create some multimedia products, both to post on the web and to be available via CD-ROM. Here's one last quick sample.
And historically, the would have been all the animals. All the animals were people. The would have been was one of the honored chiefs. And so, whenever someone catches a would have been in a trap, it's a big deal. And so, when they're coming home, they say, "Don't worry, the horse, the chief is coming." And people get excited, and the trapper bring the carcass into his house, and people in the community bring in food too.
I'm being asked for copies of this every time I present it. It's an exciting age in that the tools have become powerful enough and easy enough that we all can begin to be involved as authors of digital media without being intimidated. I've been involved with community networking and online learning for the past 15 years as an early adapter. Today, I have no bosses and no employees. I'm a model lone eagle. I'm able to learn anything and live and work anywhere in the world. The Big Sky Telegraph was a full decade of early innovation. In 94, when the web came out, I had received a major grant for online teacher mentoring with math and science teachers that was a first. I worked with Carl Knutson providing the first internet workshops on the Yukon, as I mentioned. For 8 years, I've been teaching Alaskan teachers online how to use the internet effectively in rural areas with online graduate courses through Alaska Pacific University and the Alaska Staff Development Network. For the past 5 years, I've been funded by USDA in Idaho to develop rural e-commerce curriculum, to travel with a wireless mobile laptop lab and conduct e-commerce web raisings where we create free e-commerce websites in a single hour with older adults and novices and even elementary kids. I've also been working for the past 2.5 years for the U.S. Department of Labor with the Montana Choice Demonstration Project, raising rural e-commerce awareness all across Montana. I'm also working with the AmeriCorps Community Technology Center VISTA project as the National Community Networking Resource Coordinator. VISTA volunteers are working in low-income neighborhoods teaching people about technology. I'm involved with international indigenous internet issues, commissions, and will be presenting for 23 countries Tuesday in Calgary. My current emphasis is designing local, regional, and national ICT adoption strategies. ICT stands for Information and Communications Technologies. In times of change, learners inherit the earth. And way back when, a group of people came across the land bridge to begin to populate North America. Many of them were the first Alaskans. Globally, we have 1 billion people on the internet today, with 6 billion more coming. And when I started 10 years ago, most people figured the internet was something that they didn't want to have anything to do with. Today, we're seeing indigenous peoples worldwide, in Australia and elsewhere, take ownership of the empowering potential of the internet. The best broadband application for Alaskans is self-actualization, realizing their full potential. For learning, for innovation, and for collaboration. We're limited only by our imaginations, but that can be a severe limitation if we don't have a vision for what's truly possible. And many of us are intimidated by technology, and it's my specialty, having been a rancher that was anti-fax in the 70s, it's my specialty to work with people to help them overcome their techno jitters. The internet has unleashed a global explosion of entrepreneurial creativity. eBay alone has 181 million users. That would make it the ninth largest country on the planet. Indisputable facts are before us that there is incredible opportunity out there. And perhaps the absolute best indigenous broadband application would be to keep us all up to the same instant of progress on the latest indigenous internet innovations as they occur worldwide. And so I'm here today to talk about creating a sustainable entrepreneurial culture in Alaskan Native villages, starting with youth. Kids are the first digital generation in human history, and teaching entrepreneurship in primary grades allows youth to grow up with entrepreneurship as a lifelong option. Our developing Alaskan Village Sustainability Action Plan would entail 4 items: assuring educational success for Native youth through effective online K-12 instruction matched to the standards, and youth entrepreneurship and entry-level e-commerce matched to the technology standards, and culturally appropriate community learning to include multi-generational digital storytelling. Youth entrepreneurship is something of a theme these days. There are thousands of programs all across the country. We've already spoken with Junior Achievement of Alaska about partnering with them to add a youth e-commerce and microloans component. You can start as early as kindergarten, and I deal with kindergarten teachers on a daily basis who learn to create web-based curriculum for their kids. The bottom line is, if we all learn to share what we know, we'll all have access to all our knowledge. And in an innovation economy, there's incredible potential. I'm here today courtesy of the funding support by the Alaska Manufacturing Extension Partnership, and Eric Downey, whom you'll hear from in just a moment. The eRaven e-commerce portal, Rural Alaskan Village E-Commerce Network, Raven, is supported by the Alaska Department of Commerce. There are 18 village e-commerce centers already out there, 24 more planned. A workshop is taking place in Anchorage as we speak. Youth are helping elders to sell art over the internet, and AMEP is partnering with the Alaska Native Arts Foundation to create sustainable village economies through global e-marketing of Alaskan Native art. And I will be promoting new partnerships with 23 countries as soon as next week across the Pacific Rim. AMEP and the Alaska Native Arts Foundation already has 722 artists on board, almost $500,000 in art purchases over just the last 24 months, and 42 communities have been trained or visited, and we'll be back on the road in another week or so visiting more communities. The whole village concept focuses on our goal of creating a fully integrated community-wide solution, applying outstanding educational technologies to raise student achievement, which can also be used for e-commerce training and cultural expression to create sustainable villages and cultures. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, Eric Downey with the Alaska Manufacturing Extension Partnership. I'm the Business Development Manager. Chair Dyson, Vice Chair Wilkin, and committee members, thanks much for carving out this time in your busy schedule to deal with this important subject while managing your other pressing and urgent matters of state. AMEP, the Alaska Manufacturing Extension Partnership, is a statewide organization that creates economic development by delivering fee-based consulting services to existing manufacturers. A chunk of our mission is rural economic development, mostly in e-commerce and entrepreneurship with the sale of native art, which is a manufactured product that brings cash to communities while strengthening their culture. And we find the competitive advantages wherever they may be and exploit them. And that is a great one. So what's a manufacturing consultant, for that matter? Telecom technician, an internet empowerment guy, and a TV guy doing with a bunch of educators? Well, personally, I need a more cost-effective way to do training across the state, and this whole village project would save me a lot on travel costs while also significantly improving my reach, my effectiveness, and my overall metrics. So we are supportive of this. Just for a second on entrepreneurship, why are we reaching all the way into schools? Well, entrepreneurship depends on educated kids because it's an eclectic skill set that takes a critical thinking mind in order to create economic opportunities, to create social opportunities, and to create opportunities for others. And that's what we're striving for in many of our communities. It's a mindset that needs to be fostered in the primary grades and then cultivated in the secondary grades through programs like Junior Achievement and e-commerce. We find ourselves going to villages and working with high school kids, and they're posting elders' art over the internet. It's an interesting thing, and opportunities are where we find them, and so we're working there. In general, globally, entrepreneurship works in India, China, Ireland, and other places because they have educated kids. We're raising our Alaska's first digital generation in a globally competitive flat earth market, and those kids need to be entrepreneurs and self-directed learners based on a variety of critical thinking skills. And we believe this whole village project provides a cost-effective method of getting out the information that's needed. And that's my presentation. Thank you.
Next, we have Dan Itzelain.
It's my privilege to be here before you. I'm Dan Itzelain, and I'm from Sitka. Came to Alaska 35 years ago to work with rural Alaskans, and that dream continues with me. I do own a couple TV stations, one here in Juneau and one in Sitka. But my dream and passion is to establish one in Anchorage. The license is almost here. It would be more of a hometown, community-type television with broadcast in Anchorage with statewide delivery through the internet and through satellite broadcast. And some of the programming would be the same kinds of things you've just witnessed here. But there's also some other kinds that I can see doing some training of our youth in technology over the TV, of promoting some of the things that are being espoused here. And we see all kinds of things that might happen, including the government and social services and the homeland security and other things that a T TV station or system can provide for the state, and I want to be part of it. Our emphasis would be on the interactive education that can take place and entrepreneurship that I greatly support. So it's a great part to be a partnership with this group. The next technology you're seeing and hearing now can all be supported with the video and broadcast TV that can be established. Having been on the ARCS board for a dozen years, I'm familiar with what's going on now. This would be more of an extension towards education. So I thank you for allowing us to be here and to promote a better rural Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Fletcher Brown. I'm Vice President of Communications for DRS TAMSCO. Before I begin my presentation, I want to just not look at the slides for a minute and just try to convey a vision. I'm going to hopefully kind of tie together some of the things that the previous speakers were discussing, education, economic development, and the other areas that Carrie introduced at the beginning of our whole village presentation, the eight areas of safety, health, economic development, education, culture, social services, government and administration, and finally entertainment. All these things are required to promote the healthy village, and each one of those things require that both applicable and effective information be able to be delivered to people in the villages at the time that it's needed. Relevant information that can come from many different sources. So just capture a vision for a minute. What if there were a way to provide people in the village, whether they be residences, schools, health clinics, libraries, tribal administrative offices, social service facilities, instantaneous access to information that was relevant and critical to them to be able to move forward with developing the healthy village? What if we could have something out there that looked very similar to what you have in the hall out here, where you have a beautiful system that's streaming live information, it has menuing, it says what's coming up today at different times, people can access that remotely in various places in Alaska. What if we could take information and push it out there to all these villages and have it instantaneously available? That's what I'm going to talk about today, and the concepts which I believe are extraordinarily cost-effective and can break the bandwidth barrier which is still experienced in rural Alaska. First of all, a little about our company so that you'll know who I am. We are a company that was founded in 1982 by two gentlemen in their kitchen. I went to work for them shortly thereafter. They were certified in the 8A program as a minority business, and today our company has a little over 900 employees and is doing over $330 million per year in high technology, primarily in remote and rural areas. We have 15 offices in the continental United States. We have an office in Anchorage, and we have a variety of officers in remote countries. As a side to that, since 1993, I've personally been working in Native American and Alaska Native tribal business development and have been able to bring over $750 million worth of revenue to people in remote areas. Generally, our company deals in the vast majority of our work as supporting the Department of Defense, and that is relevant to what I'm going to talk about today. We generate systems that can be rapidly deployed to provide state-of-the-art communications all over the world, anywhere from small manned deployable systems to systems pulled on Humvees to 32-foot trailers that are just chock full of equipment and can provide basic communications for an entire city. We have been funded very well by the efforts provided to us through Department of Defense and have been able to determine what is the very best technologies and how to integrate them on the planet today, and have now brought that to Alaska. Our first major initiative in Alaska was to bring up 37 villages on the Yukon Delta by satellite, combined working with our partner UUI, another 11 villages by microwave, and tie them all into a new satellite hub that was built in Bethel. Here's pictures of that hub there as it stands there today. Worked out in the villages in all seasons, winter, summer, spring breakup, utilized people in the villages where possible. We're right now deploying the largest private telephone system in Alaska. We're providing voice over IP cabinets to all 50 villages on the Yukon Delta to tie them together in a very state-of-the-art telephone system. Okay, where does that take us? We understand technology. We know which works in various places of the world. We're in Iraq, we're in Afghanistan, Macedonia, Bosnia, a variety of countries. And we recognize one thing. If you depend on bandwidth alone, you will never get to where you need to be. There will never be, it's a bold statement, there will never be enough bandwidth to satisfy the thirst and the needs of rural and remote villages in Alaska. There are more effective ways to transmit information to people that can be very cost effective, but very little attention is being given to this problem. It's generally considered to be a bandwidth problem. It's more of a utilization problem, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Without getting too technical, in the old days you had in Alaska systems that put up that used circuit-based communications. Even though it was satellite, it replicated a wire from one location to another. That is ineffective in terms of being able to utilize bandwidth effectively, because once a circuit is established, the circuit consumes all of the resources available. But now the whole entire world has moved to what's called Internet Protocol, or IP. And that's a much more efficient means of being able to utilize bandwidth. And you can now buy one increment of bandwidth, and you can share it between multiple users. And that's what's done in Alaska. That's good. The sharing of bandwidth is good, so that you could have all you gentlemen up there all typing email with one increment of bandwidth and not even know that you were sharing it, and all appear to get full usage out of it. That's fine until you reach a point where you need to consume large amounts of bandwidth to get what I'm going to call true distance learning, rich media content delivered from one point to another. And when you do that, you start consuming all of the bandwidth available for that location. There is no potential for sharing it, and that's where the system falls down. You get extraordinarily poor and slow performance in some areas. Okay, buying more bandwidth is not the answer. There are equations that will compute what the true cost of dedicated bandwidth is coming from a satellite. And it's based as a simple financial equation. It's based on the cost of raw radio spectrum, which is used to transmit information. And we've all heard the term T1. A lot of us don't know what it is, but it doesn't matter. It's a relative term. A T1's worth of bandwidth just to buy the radio spectrum will run anywhere from $7,500 to $18,000 per month per site. That does not include the cost of installing infrastructure, maintenance, monitoring, all those types of things. So the financials take us right back to the need to share bandwidth, and sharing is good up to a point. Shared connections, however, are not capable of delivering true, rich multimedia. I'm talking about training where you combine a video of an instructor with his computer desktop, an electronic blackboard, a document camera, bring everything together seamlessly, and send it out in DVD quality. So what we revert to are things like video teleconferencing, which is an effective way to distance learn, but not nearly effective as it is to bring the rich media together and be able to present a truly interactive and rich session to people. So bandwidth is not affordable to do this, and it's not relevant to being able to send that rich media out to all the locations. The people you've heard today and the other people that we are working with all have a common need. They need to train people in rural Alaska, and they need to send information out there in all of those eight areas. So how are we going to be more effective at doing that? First of all, let's go back to the vision of this having it immediately available in the village. So there's methodology to put a box out in each village. And there are methodologies to, instead of having a single stream of bandwidth go to each of you and consume maybe a megabyte each in different villages to send information or different schools, there's ways that we can take that, integrate it into a compressed signal, send it to the satellite, and what's called multicast it. So with one bandwidth stream, it can be picked up by anybody within the footprint of North America. That is generally not being utilized in Alaska, but we have now installed the capability to do that at all the sites in Bethel, Southeast Island School District, Cuspic School District, and we're beginning to build a new satellite hub next month in Fairbanks to address the 33 villages out there. Each of these has the capability to fully support multicast. So we need a beta. Compress the training information, use one IP stream to send it to many sites, have it displayed similar to what you have out here, but be able to bring up a computer desktop and different things. But even more importantly, when it gets out there, have it stick. So as it's being sent out, those who couldn't attend that lesson, it's okay. Along with that stream of information is embedded in it menuing information. And those menus are automatically built in the village, broken down by those eight categories, so people come back and review that information later for recurrent training, or pick it up if you missed it and have that information available. There are other techniques, which I won't go into, and call which are tools that can also more effectively share information. Collaboration servers, terminal servers, digital video broadcast, and the use of content management systems. So what's content? Anything that's voice, video, text, or data. That pretty much covers it. Anything that is in that area can be sent via a content management system out to multiple villages at once, all 235 of Alaska, if so equipped with equipment. It can stick there, it can be cached, and it can be locally available to everyone in the community without going back across the expensive satellite link to regain it. It even gets better because you can take that information and you can take it at night when there's horrendous amounts of unused bandwidth right now in Alaska, aggregate it, tell all the receiving terminals to spin up their window and allow large data streams to come through, and you can broadcast 12 hours at 10 megabits per second to 200 villages and have enormous amounts of data stored out there. Why shouldn't people be able to wake up in the morning and have the Anchorage Daily newspaper sitting on their electronic doorstep, or a training course in breast cancer awareness, or some culturally relevant information from Alaska Native Arts Foundation, or information from ANTHC? These are all possible. The technology is there today, and we just need to tweak it a little bit to implement it. So the idea is establish a virtual content management center for each of those eight areas and have someone responsible for distribution of that information. Here's a quick diagram, and on the bottom it shows those yellow box, and it just indicates here virtual content management centers for health, education, maybe University of Alaska, and maybe the State Library Association. You can spin up multiples of these. You take that information, aggregate it, send it to the teleport, multicast it to every village, and the one in the middle at the top shows a village there with what's called an intelligent cache, where that information is sent along with menuing information and is available to everyone in the community who can access that box. And that box can be accessed either through existing telephone lines or inexpensive wireless networks in the village. By doing this, we multiply by factors of 10, 100, or 1,000 the ability to move relevant information out to these communities. Some recent examples: Eric Downey, AMEP, wonderful program to establish e-commerce centers. Last time we met with Bill Allen from USDA in Palmer, Eric had just flown in from Hooper Bay giving a training session. How'd it go? Well, it was okay. We had to fly out to Hooper Bay. We got the people together. We had to start a little bit late. A couple of people could not fly in because of weather, so they missed it. They did the training, and he flew back. Much more cost-effective to take a dynamite lecture, get it all put into one package, multicast it out to every village, and have the people be able to look at it live as Eric presents it, but also have it sitting there, menued, to go back for recurrent training. Talked with Mr. Carl Rose from the Alaska Association of Schools Districts recently. He had a website video that was posted on their website, accessible by people on the fiber path, but not by remote Alaska. And there are many other examples of how we can do this. Okay? DOD uses this technique to train all their people deployed, and I have the documentation where they represent a 668% return on investment just by multicasting information out in the distance learning area. I'm going to hit the summary now. And basically, we've talked about today a couple of the eight areas in the Healthy or Whole Village project. Education for at-youth risk using ILA processes as described by Alyeska Worldwide and Carl Knudsen. We talked about rural economic development with my friend and colleague Frank Odaz and the various resources that are available today with no way to effectively send them out to the villages, and the ability to teach rural economic development using ILSP processes starting in kindergarten. We talked about the need to preserve native culture and be able to bring the information to the people instead of having them come to the information. And finally, content delivery network, which is an extraordinarily cost-effective way to disseminate information. So we talked about all of the things that we have talked about, and we work together on this. Everything that we come up with, ideas, thoughts, concepts, we collaborate. They must be successful, replicable, and sustainable to service these eight areas in the Healthy Village. And that ends our presentation, and I think we have time for questions and answers. And Carrie, you want to host that?
In essence of time, that does conclude our presentation. If there's any questions, please feel free to ask us now, or we can furnish any additional information at a later time. I believe you might have some handouts. We've revised them since we did it yesterday per some requests, and we have more information if you would like.
Your questions?
But, and I would like to thank you. I know it's busy time of year, but we do appreciate you allowing us to present.
Well, as usual, you got it wrong. We thank you for helping us and for helping Alaska kids and communities.
Well, we feel we have a good school model that will reduce the dropout rate, increase student achievement. We have the portability, the education. You can take it home. You can have it in class. You can have it in all different venues, homeschool, building-based, or the regional center. It works. It's been proven. And we are just committed to what we're doing.
And apparently you're doing it well.
Thank you.
Carl, will you come up and share with us, and then we'll come back to everybody with questions.
Rose or Knutson? Oh.
I was thinking of Rose, but...
there we go.
I'm sorry. It's first and second, Carl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. And thank you for the opportunity to come down and share with you some of the things that we're advancing. Before you, I've given you two documents. One is a schematic, looks like this. And the other one is a one-page bullet point, both two-sided, but one page. Okay. I'd like to preface my comments by, some of you received a book that I was passing out earlier in the session, and that book was The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman. We are experiencing an unprecedented phenomenon, and that is the globalization by the use of technology. The book suggests that there were four elements that no one planned for. One was the fact that browsers were introduced to the software to be able to have computers communicate. The onset of the dot-com boom that appeared to not have a ceiling, so we wired the world. And then the dot-com bust that caused systems to be sold on the fire sale for 10 cents on a dollar. You add all those things up with the Berlin Wall going down and the political wall that went down with it, and all of a sudden you've got 3 billion highly motivated, well-educated, and anxious capitalists in the world, in the market. You couple that with the large population that exists in China and India, and you're starting to see that this flattening world is having a profound impact on us. If you have seen the book, you would know that people who prepare taxes for a living, about 70% of them are outsourcing that, digitizing your taxes, removing the identification and sending it to India because it's more cost effective, quicker turnaround, and more accurate. And if that doesn't surprise you, you'll find that the IRS sends 70% of their workload digitized to India to be done. Now, for some people, they're not too taken aback by that. And for most of us, we appear to be okay with this global economy until the Dubai ports world shows up on our doorstep, and all of a sudden it's a phenomena that now we have to interface with. Let me bring you back to why I'm here. The world has changed, and the environments in which we operate have changed. And I would share with you that education has to adapt as well. What we're doing right now is we're educating kids the way we've always educated them, and you spend about $1 billion to do it. The question has to be, how do we make fundamental changes while we continue to operate and augment? I'm proposing a digital consortium that will help us with an investment to provide some additional resource and leverage local resources to be able to put digital technology in the schools. Long story short, what we're trying to do is to build a digital delivery system in school districts so that we can give our kids the currency that they need to address the future, because the currency of the future will be digital. My concern, and I visited this morning with a few people, is that the way we do business, we're spending all the money that we have to try to keep our doors open to continue to do what we're doing right now, and it's not serving us in the best interest of the future. As we sit here today, we can't describe what the future will look like 5 to 10 years from now. 5 years ago, we wouldn't have been here having this conversation. So I would share with you, What the digital consortium is going to do, and I'm going to be referring to this document here, we're looking at a 33% investment from the local level up against a 33% investment from the legislature, up against a 33% investment from federal funds. And we tagged it at $5 million. $5 million local up against a match of $5 million from the state, up against a match of $5 million from the federal government. We've made our applications for these resources, and I was pleased to hear what Senator Stevens had to say to us last month when he came to town. He mentioned that if we want more federal funding, we're going to have to be prepared to make a contribution as the state. I believe that local contribution, state contribution, as well as federal contributions gives us the kind of money that we can pay a 66% effort behind school districts who are prepared to make this move. Now, you're going to ask, how are we going to sustain that? I did mention earlier that we pay somewhere in the area about $1 billion a year for education. That's the sustainability for technology. If we can help them, help school districts move into technology, they'll have to sustain it from their current resource. It's how you reallocate your money. There's a reason why, but the, you know, all of our school districts do spend money in technology, but it's not integrated, and it's not done in a holistic fashion. You've all heard some concerns that many of us buy hardware. It's not associated with technical assistance or professional development. And in many cases, the results are less than satisfactory. What we propose here is, in partnership with Apple Computer, to take a look, and I would have to mention that Apple Computer is an industry leader in this area. If you take a look at what they've done, they've got over 700 initiatives around the nation. They've learned a lot, and we expect to learn from them. What we want to do is come in and provide school districts with some, and I have them listed here. We want to determine their level of readiness, engage the community. Just imagine, you're going to do something like this in your schools, and you don't tell your community what you're going to do. I mean, that could be a real problem. But if your community knows what the challenges are and what you're trying to do to assist schools in being able to meet the future, that is a huge help. Securing hardware and the peripherals and software, that will come just as a result of an investment. But when you take a look at the training, the kind of technical support and the management of change, those are critical issues to success. AASB is prepared to put its credibility on the line to take a leadership role in creating this opportunity to help our schools make the change that's so critically important. Apple Computer was in town yesterday, and part of today, we're doing a nuts and bolts thing as to how to make this thing work. I will just share with you that this document that I've put out, the bullets, this is the why, the what, the how, and the when. This document here simply shows you that the delivery system that we built will be of value to everyone who just spoke to you. Everyone who just spoke to you are vendors. They have some good programs. They have things to offer. If our school districts are prepared to access some of that, I think that's the benefit in what we're trying to do. But far more than just the people you heard here today, if we are dealing with a flattening world, and I would leave you with this thought, if you look at the book, it will tell you that we have the most potent economy ever known to mankind. And if the world is flattening, we stand the most to lose. If we're number one and the world is flattening, we stand the most to lose. The question is, what are we doing with our school systems to ensure that our kids have every advantage to be able to be competitive in a global economy? I think I'm going to cut my comments right there because there's a lot to talk about here, and I'd love to answer any questions you might have.
Wes, is there any other presenters? All right. So, Carl, help me think through here and help the committee think about just our K-12 education. What is this kind of network and delivery system going to do?
Okay.
Let's go right down the line.
Okay. I would share with you that this, what we're proposing here, is a pilot. Okay. We can't do it system-wide. It's a pilot. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to integrate technology, digital technology, in a holistic
You already
fashion.
Said that.
Okay. I think what it does, it gives our students an opportunity to use technology for learning. Not to learn technology, but to use it for learning.
Like?
Like being able to access information.
Okay. All right, here's what I want you to say.
Sure.
You got a kid that needs to learn to read. How's this technology going to help the kid learn to read?
Well, there are a number of ways. If you look at technology, it's a huge enhancement to what you currently do. I mean, teaching kids to read is something that we do in our classes now. It can be enhanced with technology.
And if you've got a kid that's got a specific learning problem, needs a gifted teacher in that area, that person can be engaged with that kid via a video link or a computer link, and that teacher with that specialized ability doesn't have to be in that one community where they got one kid with that specific problem.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's true across the curriculum, yes.
Yeah, and every kind of interest and problem a kid has interconnected to this network you're talking about will be the tools and the expertise and the gifted teacher to help them.
I think there would be some issues of confidentiality, but yes, correct.
Okay. All right. If you get a school that's been failing for a while and you've got to provide the parents in that village with some choices, how's this going to help those parents have a choice?
I can see eventually when these systems are in place, choices could be provided. What I see happening now is I'm looking at, and I think you're beyond where I'm at, where what I'm doing now is I'm looking at pilots to create levels of success. And with that success, we'll be here next year to be able to do additional. And it's going to take some time for us to get this across the state.
Sure, sure.
I think the magnitude of the problem is so large that if I brought it to you, we'd probably ignore it.
All right. Wes, you want to join us? We're going to get time crunched here, but I wanted to get at some bottom line punchlines. What are some of the other things, Wes, that are required under No Child Left Behind and just our own demand for excellence for our kids in education that this kind of a network and systems and tools will help?
For the record, Wes Keller, did you want me to start, go through, or just answer the question off my off? One of the things that AYP, the No Child Left Behind, and the annual yearly progress has called to into attention here is we have 203 schools that are failing, that need improvement in this area, and some of the areas that are consequences for not meeting the standards that the state has laid down. One of them is parental choice is required. Another one is supplemental education services is required. I can go through. I have a PowerPoint that we can do later if you like, but also...
Are you ready to do that now?
I could, if you like.
Go. Please.
Jason, is this ready to roll, this laptop? Or?
I think that's Fletcher's.
Oh, that's Fletcher's.
Gary?
Can
I
just put it in there?
Yeah. Senator Wilkin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we do that, I have another meeting at 3 I have to be at, but I want to find out, I want to make sure, Carl, I understand here, because I was sitting here trying to figure out how you went with that, and I think I understand it at the end. Let me see if what I think you said, the whole village is, the concept is a vendor. You're the toolbox, and they're the tools in the toolbox. Is that right?
That
so you're
pretty good at that.
What's the relationship for us today between these two presentations we've seen?
Through the chair, the difference is that the Association of Alaska School Board, as a nonprofit, a private entity, is taking full responsibility for transparency and accountability for the money that we're pursuing. We want to get that money out to school districts that are ready, so that we can create pockets of success, so we can grow technology across our state. It's too big for us to do it one shot. That's what we're doing. We're trying to create the digital footprint for school districts that would probably access some of the information that you've heard here today. We're not the same entity. We're the School Board Association, and this is a separate entity. But I think we're going down the same channel.
So if I could, so is this, would this be right? And I know you've been working on a $15 million federal state Apple consortium here, which you presented to us. So if my school district decided and was able to hook up with your initiative, would my school district then go to the whole village concept and do parts or all of what they presented to us? Is that the relationship?
Through the chair, If your school district were to implement a digital program.
Yes.
Local control will determine who the vendors are going to be, where they go, what kind of curriculum, what kind of software. It'll be their decision, not ours.
Yes, okay.
Okay.
I understand. So then they, depending on how they want to organize that, your initiative, they'll go out and choose which tools to use, one of which could be this that we've seen today.
Correct. When we refer to this document here,
okay,
we're in partnership with Apple. Apple is going to be providing the hardware, the software, and the peripherals. The professional development to operate those systems effectively and the technical support. The professional development for teaching and learning are going to be offered by other vendors.
Yeah, okay.
Both here and elsewhere.
Okay, that helps me understand this.
And, Linka, you know, I see Carl as having his eye on something bigger than doing his job, which is representing the school boards. I see him trying to think about how can we make this education thing work better, and particularly in the rural areas. And so he's, in my view, he's kind of past his job description here, being a dreamer and a prophet, trying to make a paradigm shift work. And what I want Wes to present here a little bit is how the technology and so on can solve a half a dozen significant problems that we're headed towards. And Pat or Wes put together this little PowerPoint.
And I'll go quickly. I realize with everything going on, I don't want to tell you stuff you already know, but that's...
I'm sorry. Hang on a second.
A question for you. I have a couple of questions. How are we going to do this? Are we going to have everybody up at the table then at the end? And is there going to be time for questions?
We will ask questions of specific people you want to, and we'll have a little bit of time afterwards. Okay. And we can catch them and stuff. I don't want you to miss anything, but I want to get through this as well. Go ahead, Wes.
Okay, most of us are aware that we spend $10,578 per student on the average, but the median, it was just published, this is in the SCR 28, is $16,655, which is the highest in the nation. And the reason the median is so much higher than the average is because of the cost of our rural education. This just shows how the different districts are broken up. The reason I put it there is just because 70% of our districts are right there, so most of the kids are in the bigger districts, so we have a lot of them out there. This really tells you not much of anything. I just included it in the one picture, but it's all the schools broken up into a pie chart. And it's interesting that this one right here, you might guess, is Galena IDEA, but anyway, NAEP was just published here, I think it was October, November, and they show that roughly 70% of our kids are not proficient.
What's NAEP?
Any national
assessment.
Thank you. What's significant about NAEP is it is the only assessment tool that we use in Alaska that is normed nationally. We have a lot of good assessment tools, and they're getting better and better, and we're getting to the point where we can evaluate, the product that's coming out of the school. But NAEP is nationally normed, and so we can compare here with what's going across. This is the one slide I really wanted you to see, because I think there's a train wreck here that's coming that we haven't talked about that much. This number down here, if you'll notice, this is level 5 of the schools that are failing to make AYP. They don't like it to use the word failing, but and probably for good reason, because some of the reasons you can get to these different levels really have nothing to do directly with education. But we'll review in a minute just exactly what these things mean. But what I want you to notice here is that level 2 has gone from 112 to 45, 39 to 93, 7 to 35. What's happening is, as the years go on, there's a lump of schools that are coming down here to this level 5, which what I would describe is where the brick wall is. We got all these problems that are coming up in these schools or factors that are causing us to say they're not making the standard. And at the end, there's something called restructuring, which is a big deal if we follow through with it. And even if we don't follow through with it, the implications politically are going to be incredible, I would predict, you know, as we get maybe 100 schools, if that ever happens, down this end. If this continues, goes on, if you just extrapolate here, next year it'd be about 50. You just take these two, and the year after that it'd be 150 or roughly, you know.
But so, on level five, that school is what you in business would think of as bankrupt. They're done. They, all the way they've been doing it, everybody they've been doing with it, in the ditch. They're starting over, new management team and the whole business. They've had all their chances, you know, and it's in a wreck.
Parenthetically, I got to say, I'm talking, when we talk about the level five levels, we're talking about schools that get Title I money. And that's not the whole ball of wax. You can see right here, 124 out of 291, they're Title I schools. But there are consequences for those that don't receive the funds, too. Level one, just real quickly, is just an alert level. That means something's wrong. And the only thing required, the only consequence is they have to get technical assistance from the district or from the EED to get out of level one. And then when it gets to, if it progresses another year to level two, then the school must provide choice or supplemental services. And if they have to provide choice, but if it's not available, then they can provide the supplemental services. Then three.
And supplemental services like tutors.
Tutoring.
Online help.
It's aligned curriculum maybe that is aligned to our standards, something to pull them back toward the meeting of standards. And then if it goes on to level four, the same things continue. You got the school plan continues, you got choice, you got the supplemental services, but then you have to add one of these, only one. And as you go through those, it's kind of interesting because if you look at them, each one, you look at them individually and you wonder why, you know, if it's really that big a deal, you know, it just doesn't seem like the consequences are that high. But when you get here to level five, then the first year of level five, then what happens is the district has to come into play, come up with a plan for the school that includes alternative governance for the school. We have seven schools that I counted in level 5-1 that, you know, there should be a plan in place somewhere. I haven't seen them. Where there's a charter school supposed to open up, or all the staff is supposed to be replaced, or one of those things. And then level 5-2 is when that plan begins to be implemented. So that's why level 5 is so significant. And this is, I think, the slide that you were asking about there to begin with, that technology could clearly address these things. I mean, especially in light of some of the things that they presented today. But if you look especially at the bottom here, supplemental services, new curriculum, new staff, alternative governance, all those things can be made available through using technology. In general, this is just in general terms, this just to call it all back, we've got the perfect test bed for applied educational technology. Distance goes away, the effective distance goes away as technology. This is real basic stuff and assumed it already, but the point is, in Alaska, we have such a unique situation with our remote schools. It's a perfect fit. This idea of consolidation into virtual classrooms has been addressed a little bit today, but how many kids in a one-room school have to learn the multiplication table at one time? You know, you think about it, one or two, you know, and a lot of these schools, I'll show you in a minute how many we have that are under 50 kids in the school. So the teacher has to direct the attention to that one child to get over that hurdle, and then something else. So anyway, what technology allows is to take all the kids in all these schools, put them together, and you might have 50 kids that are learning the multiplication tables, and you can have a highly qualified teacher accessible to that group of kids.
And those kids could be in 30 different geographic locations.
Exactly, yeah.
But they could be all linked up, interacting, and with a gifted teacher who loves to teach them multiplication tables. With all kinds of visual helps.
Exactly. And this idea of the cumulative student records, that's what I think Carl talked about, or Carrie, about the individual learning plans. When you think about it, someone here today said that it's a new way to teach, and that's true, because you can look at these records, these accumulated records from the kids, at your fingertips from any computer, any place in the world on the internet. Okay, and what happens, you can do diagnostics on the kid, you know, and teach the child. So these records that accumulate are really, really incredibly important. Collaboration, of course, is increased. You've heard that today. But teachers can work together, you know, share notes on a child, you know, the reports that the legislature wants or whatever, all easier to come by. It's already been said a couple times, but I think Carl Rose here just said, you know, it's unprecedented, the amount of information that's out there. And the significance of that is that our kids are already online. 90% of our classrooms in Alaska are on the internet. Not each kid, but each classroom. 90%, that's what EED told us not too long ago. And I think it's 69% of our households are on the internet. So the information is already there for those kids. And what we have to do, I think, is use technology to help them manage and screen and be able to pick out the right knowledge and information, because, you know, so it can get there. I won't go over the others because they're kind of repetitive, so I'm just going to press on here. Some myths, I think, that need to be addressed when you talk about education technology. The first thing here is that it takes teachers out of the equation. That is simply not true. I mean, it's a different what they have to do, but it's their dream tools. They're dream tools for a teacher. I've sat through a couple demos of, it wasn't media rich, Fletcher. It was like about the level of using Windows, you know, online. It's incredible. It's easy, not that hard. Correspondence application, that's a myth. That's what's happened, though, in Alaska. You see, IDEA, for example, you know, not to pick on IDEA, is using all the technology. That's ridiculous. In our communities, we have, I've been into a lot of the rural communities. We come in, and the truck that picks you up belongs to the school district. And if they don't know what to do with you, they bring you to the school, you know. And if you have no place to stay, there's no hotels there. You stay in the school. If there's no restaurants, you know, if you don't know anybody, you eat from the school kitchen. I mean, it's just the way things are. Well, we can't take those, nobody wants to take those things away. There's no reason why technology can't be used in these brick and mortar schools. I mean, they're just, it's fantastic. Another, I think, myth is that education technology is computers. There's so much more. I mean, the software and teachers need extensive new training. I want to talk about that a little bit. I graduated as a teacher from the University of Wisconsin 20 years ago, and what I learned is basically there is still very, very true. You figure out what the kid doesn't know, you know, evaluate it, and then you design curriculum, lesson plans, assignments to address that, what the child doesn't know. And then you test them again, and if they don't get it, then you try again. Well, that hasn't changed. You know, what's changed is that you have to, you know, we've got so many such cool tools now available with the technology. So there is training, but it isn't as extensive as you might think. I could pick up on it. I know I could pick up on it and start using it in pretty short order. And I'm, you know, out of practice by real bad. This idea of education technology being expensive, sure, it's expensive, but there's an incredible amount of savings available. And that's why I'm throwing this slide up. If you look at this, it's amazing. This is schools with less than 50 kids, 24%. Of our schools in Alaska have less than 50 children in them. If you take just under 100, you know, both these bars, that's 37% of our schools in Alaska. Now, don't get the wrong idea. Most of the students are down here. But still, there's a group of children in these small schools that are our most expensive schools, and we could use technology and save money doing it and use that money reallocated if we can build the incentives. We can reallocate it to use this technology. This last slide, or next to the last one, is it isn't really accurate, but the idea here is, as you go this way, that's the size of the school, and that's the plot here, okay? And our average pupil-to-teacher ratio is 17:1. Okay, the small schools you see is way down here is a lot of teachers for every kid. You know, up here, you get above average, you got your pupil-teacher ratio is real high, but the cost is here. That's the point. And what I mean it isn't accurate is that this is a smaller delta, really. I mean, because they aren't talking about that many kids, but there is a significant amount of money there available if we can take the multiplication table example that I used. You know, just think of the difference there, you know, of teaching 25 kids at the same time instead of one. It's just going to have an effect. Do you want me to go ahead and address SCR 28, what it does? Okay, that's where I was going.
Yeah, and what for the committee's benefit, Wes had put together just a resolution that we as a legislature can pass, just encouraging schools and districts to jump in and do all of these things. Just a statement on our part. And we'll come back to that when we, on Friday, when we have a quorum here. Carl, and I want these guys to be able to ask some questions.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I might, I would share with you that technology is not the silver bullet. Technology is something that needs to be introduced. It needs to be perfected. You have to have system-wide proficiency to get these kind of savings. It's a big job. We got to start somewhere. We need to start getting the technology in place, increasing the level of proficiency, and then you're going to see some results. But it's an investment. If all things were equal and everyone was up to speed, I think there might be some possibility of this actually being doable. But it's a big job.
Senator Elton.
Thanks.
You can address a question to anybody here.
Well, I'm gonna say something first, and then we'll see who pops up to want to address it. We've heard the term silver bullet a couple of times, and I mean, I don't want to. I hope I'm not misrepresenting what I've heard, but I mean, we've got the silver bullet of the whole village project. We've talked previously in this committee about the silver bullet of mentoring. We've talked about the silver bullet of incentives, school incentives that the commissioner wants. We've got, you know, a lot of silver bullets. And just as part of this statement, too, what I see in many of the districts across the state is we've heard about the brick walls. We've got the brick wall of No Child Left Behind. We've got the brick wall of AYP. We've got the brick wall of exit exams. All of these other things that we're heading toward, and yet what seems to be happening is we're looking at all these different silver bullets. We've got a pot of money for, you know, all of them, and yet schools are getting rid of ancillary programs, and they're teaching to the test because that's the regime and recipe we've kind of set up, and I don't like it, but that's where we are. And so it seems that we're doing two things. One is we're balkanizing, you know, we've got all these brick walls, but we're balkanizing our funding sources. And it seems to me that if we would just say, okay, we're going to add these different, you know, whether it's $5 million or $15 million for school incentives or $4.5 million for mentoring and $2 million for a whole village, if we would just take all these dollars for these different silver bullets and we'd add them to the base student allocation and then give our districts the opportunity to participate in Carl's program, for example, if they wanted to, that might be the best thing to do. And so I guess I'm looking now at the whole village people. When I look at the prepared material that says it's a home and school-based instruction program that integrates commerce and entrepreneurial components. It uses the enhanced junior achievement model. Students have an opportunity to develop their own business plan. My schools are taking those things out so that they can focus on teaching to the test. And so I guess a little bit of frustration here that we've got these huge problems that Wes has pointed out. We've got all these different alternatives that seem to kind of nickel and dime the big pot of money that the district should be getting so that they can use them as their school boards think appropriate. I don't know who wants to tackle it, but I'm frustrated, I guess, by all the silver bullets, and I'm frustrated by all the promises when we have big problems coming up.
Come on, Carl.
Let me turn the lights on, Mr. Chairman.
Pardon?
Let me turn the lights on.
Sure, go ahead.
Chairman Dyson and Senator Elton, I guess that I want to clear up some confusion that has resulted from our presence, relationship to Carl Rose and the project he's under, and that I totally support what he's trying to do, and I think it's very, very much needed. And so I do not want to distract from his efforts from our efforts. And so I'm going to try to delineate the two. And what I'm going to tell you is that the project that he has undertaken is commendable and it's worthy of funding and it's necessary because given the current level of funding and the current efforts that's made in the districts now and the current abilities that's out there, it's nothing's ever going to change significantly. And so his object is to prove that if you inject money and technology through the digital technology and computers, that you can make a blip of a difference that'll catch on and elevate that. And so I'm not going to talk anymore about his program, but I'm trying to say that that is where his direction is, the best I can conclude. What we're attempting to do is simply, we realize when we talked to Bill Allen, he said, you know, junior achievement is shrinking out there because schools are doing exactly what you're saying. They're trying to teach to the test, so they're throwing out anything that takes up teacher and student time to be able to teach the kids to the test. Well, I'm here to tell you that's the wrong approach. The approach that I'm professing that we did in Galena was to simply train the teachers to integrate the state standards into the lesson plan so that they're giving the kids what they need to know on the test. And they don't have to teach to the test. They need to teach to the standards that are represented on the tests. And they have time to do the rest. And so it's a whole paradigm shift that they have to get away from the concept that the curriculum is a textbook. We spent thousands of dollars in grant money researching the fact that one textbook, I don't care what textbook you pick, will not have more than 68% of what the child needs to know in that grade and that subject. And yet we continue to adopt a textbook and say that's a curriculum. And what we're trying to say is you need to do individual learning plans, or schools need to throw textbooks out and have the teachers the tools, even if it's through the program that Carl is doing, with the ability for teachers and students to go online and seek what they need to know for those tests on the standardized, the standards that's presented, and make sure that they're covering what they need to know. And so I'm hoping that I'm clarifying the fact that our project, which we developed in Galena, was simply training teachers to use more than the textbook, but actually teach from the standards. They automatically then raise a student achievement and not have it textbook driven. Does that help clear up?
If I could follow.
Briefly, Chair, yes.
It doesn't really. And you may, somebody may need to just come and talk to me later, because when I look at the whole village project, and I don't know whether it's good or bad, but when I look at this and I see that You're doing a lot of things in here. I mean, I use the junior achievement model as a specific. You're doing things in here that is counter to what is happening in a lot of other districts. We're tossing away art teachers, and we're tossing away counselors and music programs, all of which I agree with you can help the whole student and can enable them to demonstrate a standard or live up to a standard. But this is, it seems to me you're seeking money, you know, to do something that other districts aren't allowed to do because of all these brick walls that are out there. I guess that's okay, but I don't know why we're balkanizing the money.
Yeah.
In a way when maybe the best thing to do is just add to the BSA and tell districts, you know where you got to get to, and you know how you're going to be tested. Use the money in the way that you think best works for your individual student, your individual school, and your community.
Chairman Dyson and Central, I guess that maybe if we could be availed some time to explain this to you, you know, on a one-to-one and show you our computer software, you'll understand it a little bit better. But What I'm trying to say and profess in this slide is that we continue to raise. In fact, over the last 4 years, we put 34% more in out there with expectations that districts are going to do it. And I'm here to tell you, I'm a retired superintendent. I've been one for 36 years. And the people I know out there are going to try to do what they've been doing and continue to do it, and you give them more money, and it's still not, even if you incrementally increase it, it's not enough to infuse something in there like we're talking about. And so you're not going to change much. You're going to still have that train wreck happening. It's just going to put it off some. And I guess what I'd like to do is you know, take some time and show you the process by which teachers could be trained differently, students learn differently, and then you don't have to throw stuff out because those kids are meeting AYP without any effort.
So last night, over some really delicious crab locally caught, Wes sat down with me and went over this stuff. And let me tell you the picture I've got. And Frank, you're the guy that really sparked my imagination, and maybe, I don't know, maybe it's your diagrams or whatever, but I see what these guys are talking about is they've got a pair of bolt cutters and they're out cutting the fences that balkanize the schools. You know, so a kid in any school, anywhere, isn't limited by the walls around him or around his district, but with the communication trail stuff, he can participate in art classes that are going on anywhere in the state. Kids that are doing the same kind of stuff with gifted teachers who, you know, really excited about that stuff. To me, one of the great tragedies, the dumbest thing we can ever do is convincing a kid that learning ain't fun. Kids love to learn, and all you got to do is cut the padlock and let them out of the cage, you know, and let it be fun. And these tools can make it fun. It can, and they can, if you cut down the fences, the balkanization, a kid can be participating in classes of his particular interest that are not constrained to a geographic area or even a particular hour of the day. You know, it's huge flexibility. Most teachers I know are like Wes. They dreamed of doing this and making a difference in children's lives. And with these tools, you can take much of the mundane stuff that a teacher has to do and streamline that so they can take care of their administrative duties and all that kind of stuff far more quickly, and then they can really spend the time teaching the kids. You got a pair of bolt cutters here that cut off the handcuffs that are on the teachers that are tying them down to doing things that are, you know, really not doing it. My kids, when they were in high school, did a time and motion study, and they came down to, between the three of them, their classes were, in an 8-hour day, they had between 77 and 92 minutes of actual face-to-face time with a teacher. The rest of it was, you know, going to classes, doing, you know, moving around and all that kind of stuff. With these kind of tools, you can have far more of the pure joy of learning. And so they wanted to break down the walls, break down the fences, and cut off the handcuffs, you know, with all these tools, and let it be far more efficient and stuff like that. You might have 280 kids scattered around all of Western Alaska that really want to learn aviation technology. They don't have to be in one place anymore. They can be in a dozen schools with one or two teachers who are doing it. When we get in trouble here, we don't have enough highly qualified teachers. A highly qualified teacher doesn't have to be with his foot nailed in the village square in one village. He can be in the region, anywhere in the region. He can be sitting in your living room in Montana teaching our kids, you know. We'd rather have him here, but that kind of freedom to do all these kind of things, and what these folks are talking about is the tools to do it, to set everybody free to learn any time of the day, anywhere they're at, and access all the kinds of exciting and motivated and caring teachers.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. And we've got another meeting we got to get set up for here. Please hang around, and there's lots more that we need to have you guys help us. Thank you. We're adjourned.